Calling all small firm architects. It's time to tap into your full potential with Entree Architects Context and Clarity, where inspiration meets innovation. Hey, it's Mark R. LePage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my two favorite co-hosts, Jeff Eccles and Katie Kangas, as they bring together authors, experts, and thought leaders for electric conversations with entrepreneur architects around the globe. It's not just a podcast. It's a community where dreams meet action.
There's a simple equation there. And what for me, what that did, just doing that basic calculation, was it allowed me to compare what I had actually saved in my retirement accounts to what I thought a possible projected annual spend might be.
Artists are temperamental, so beautiful design is going to be a priority. When the job is done, we're going to actually need to live in the house, not live with the person who designed it. And so for me, the artistic skill, the architectural skill is most important. And so I would say like that would be 60% of it, if not more.
Gain insights to build a successful practice. Subscribe, engage, and let's redefine your future together. Join the Context and Clarity community, where every conversation adds to your blueprint for success. This is the Entree Architect Podcast, episode 80. Welcome back to the Entree Architect Podcast. My name is Mark R. LePage, and this is the podcast dedicated to a successful life as a small firm architect. Whether you have plans to someday start your own firm, whether you're in the process of launching a startup, or you might be an experienced small firm architect just trying to make a difference, this podcast is for you. My goal is to inspire you to build a better business so that you may pursue your purpose with passion and live the life of your dreams. Building a successful business can be fun if you play it like a game. Learn the rules, build your skills, make small improvements on a consistent basis, and you will soon master the game. Soon, you will have a successful small firm architecture studio. This week on the Entree Architect Podcast, I have the great pleasure to speak with the man who knows all about the game of business. He quite literally wrote the book on why small firms don't work and what to do about it. This week on the Entree Architect Podcast, I am speaking with the author of The E-Myth Architect and the founder of the new website Architecture Plus Business, Norbert Lemmemeyer. This episode of the Entree Architect Podcast is brought to you by the Get Focused Course, 16 videos that will show you how to get things done and live a successful, stress-free life as a small firm architect. Visit getfocusedcourse.com. Norbert Lemmemeyer, welcome to the Entrepreneur Architect Podcast.
Good to be here. Thank you.
I appreciate you spending some time with us today. You've written the book that I wanted to write. The E-Myth Revisited by Michael E. Gerber is my favorite book of all time. It is the book that I share with every small business owner, whether they're a small business architect or whether they're a pizza owner. The E-Myth Revisited by Michael Gerber is the book that I share with everybody. And you wrote the book, The E-Myth Architect, Why Architecture Firms Don't Work and What to Do About It. You're also the founder of Architecture Plus Business online, where you bring business training direct to architects. And that's at architectureplusbusiness.com. And before that, you've been practicing for quite a while. You've been in the profession for 35 plus years, working from Western Canada. And so I think that you and I will have a very interesting conversation here on the Entrepreneur Architect Podcast.
I'm looking forward to that.
So before we get into that, let's do what I always do and get into your origin story. We'd love to know your story, your journey. So take us way back to where you learned about architecture and this profession that we're we're living in here, and give us your journey to where you find yourself today.
Well, I think it all began in the eighth grade, where they were doing an addition to the school that I was going to at the time. And even before the construction started, my teacher got hold of a set of the drawings, and he brought out these big sheets of paper with all these magical notes and drawings on it, and just sort of captivated my attention completely. Then when construction started, I used to watch every day by the hoarding fence and see what was going on. And then one day along comes the architect in this big fancy car, and he comes onto the job site, and the whole site focuses on him. And so that was made a tremendous impression on me. And I suppose ever since that day, I geared myself towards getting into architecture. Once I finished high school, I went to a technical school for architectural technology, and that's basically was draftsman in those days. And I worked for 7 years in an architect's office then, after I graduated. And then I decided to go back and study architecture. By this time, I had a wife and two kids, but that didn't stop me. I went through the 4 years and graduated in 1976. I then spent the 2 years in apprenticeship and became an architect in 1978. And before the year was over, I was into practice for myself. And that's when my troubles began.
So you dove right into the profession right out of once you did your 2 years, you opened up a practice.
Yeah, pretty much. Well, the architect that I was working for at the time, I had worked for him sort of throughout my, well, right is from when right when I became a draftsman, I worked for him, and then during the intervening years, when I was studying architecture, I worked for him continuously. So for 13 years, I worked for this guy, and I was the star performer in his office, both in terms of technical drawings and also design drawings once I became an architect. So I thought, well, if I'm this good, I should certainly start up my own office, never ever having once thought about the business aspect of it, which I soon found out about, I have to tell you that.
Right. I mean, it looks so easy when you're working for somebody else, right? You just do the drawings and somebody sends you a check.
Exactly. Pretty much. That's what I thought it was all about. So actually, for the first few years, and also there was a boom going on where we were in, and so I worked like day and night, but it was just a pleasure, you know, because I was in architecture calling my own shots. And then, of course, then about 3 or 4 years, the reality set in because I just burnt out, you know, working 10, 12, 14 hours a day. And finally, I realized what I didn't have, this expertise. So I struggled on for about 20 more years the same way, what I call homemade business in architecture. That's what I call it. And then finally, one day I said, either I learn business properly or I give up the profession. So that's when I got involved with Michael Gerber and the E-Myth, and I took the online mastery program and completely revamped my company, and what a difference that made. And so consequently, that came sort of in the latter stages of my career as an architect. So it took me, I would say I started in about 1995 to make this change. And at first, I didn't take it all that seriously. But then in about, I'd say 2004, I got to the mastery program and I said, this is the way it's going to be. I'm going to make the change. And then once I spent 3 years sort of following the program, converting my business, by this time I was, 68 years old. And so I practiced another 3 years, and then I passed the business on to my employees. And some of them were very strong advocates of the systems process. And I think they're doing actually sort of quite well in their companies right now. Well, I've moved on to, I wrote the book, and then I moved on to, I'm actually sort of mentoring small businesses. I have two architects and I have two non-architectural small businesses that I'm mentoring.
And so you're doing the mentoring through Is it your own specific company, or are you working through the guidelines of eMyth?
I've set up my own program, but it follows the kind of the general path that the eMyth follows and how I learned it from the eMyth Mastery Program. Did you take the eMyth Mastery Program yourself?
I did not, but the more you're talking about it, the more, because, you know, I've considered it so many times and I've read the book over a dozen times.
Yeah.
But I never took the program.
Well, I still read the book from time to time myself. Every time I read it, I seem to get something new out of it or refreshes my mind. Of course, yeah, there's no question about it.
I do the same thing. Anytime I need some inspiration, that's the book I pull off the shelf.
Well, I'll send you a copy of my eMyth Architect, and then you won't have to sort of wade through the cookie making businesses and things like that.
That's right. If anybody doesn't know, anybody who hasn't read the eMyth Revisited, it basically. The story revolves around a woman who started a bakery, a pie baking business, and Mr. Gerber sort of leads her through the process of re-educating herself about business and how business works and why businesses fail. And what Norbert has done is has written the book The eMyth Architect, which takes the same concept but applies it to the things that we're doing as architecture and business in architecture.
I just want to add that the passion that I have now for helping and mentoring small business architects is as strong as the passion that I had for actually sort of designing and doing architecture, simply because I could see now how much I could have used this. So any new startup business that comes along, I just want to help them. It's just a passion that I have. And I know now exactly what they need to be successful.
Yeah, I mean, we have very similar missions, and I can definitely feel the same passion that you do. Luckily, my wife is an architect, and we're partners.
And so the
combination of Anne Marie, who loves design and loves architecture and loves creating buildings, I have that same passion for running our business and doing the things that it requires to be successful and playing the game of business, which is how I look at it. You really need to understand the rules like any game, and the better you know those rules and the better you get skilled at those rules, the better you can play the game and succeed in business. What I thought was very interesting in your story that you told us in the beginning of the show here is how late in your career you discovered eMyth and how to recreate your business, and you did that, and you created and you built a successful business, and then handed it down to your employees. Was that a specific planned objective when you rebuilt the business and realized that there was something more for you to do? Was it a plan to sort of sell it to the employees?
Not really, but previous to having converted it to a proper business, I couldn't see how it could be worth anything to anyone, because it was all inside me. So how could I sort of pass that on to anyone? I mean, the training that I give my employees certainly was valid, but really, when it came to the office, it wasn't really worth anything. The only worth in the office was me, myself, or the employees themselves. Where once I got a company up and running according to the systems process, there are all these systems. I had about 70 major systems that ran the office then. Now, all these systems that weren't used every day, and some of them were just used as sort of reference material. But if someone had to find out how I would do something, they could refer to the systems. We call it the Systems Bible. And it was sort of a reference book, and the typical systems like how to do schematic design, how to do design development, how to do working drawings, all these were on everyone's desk, so they could refer to them on a sort of a daily basis. And as they were going through their projects, we had what we call a chart. The chart was set up on the first day. Okay, one thing I have to tell you about, especially the production systems, is there's a first step and a last step. And most times in my career, there was no beginning or no ending to any of the projects. They just sort of faded in and then they sort of faded out.
Right, yeah.
And one of the most important things that I felt that we needed a starting point and an end point to each phase of the project and to each project. And that seemed to really make a huge difference, because then you could sort of tie the project up in a knot at the end. And okay, so then we had what we call a chart. And this chart then set out the different steps that we take during each process, e.g. the schematic design process, the design process, working drawings process, tendering, and also construction services process. So then let's just say, and this often happens, and I have I like being on schedule, but sometimes projects, through no fault of our own, they go off schedule. It could be the weather, it could be delivery of materials and all that sort of thing. So if this project that we set out at the beginning of the project went off schedule, we redrew the program, we redrew the schedule. So each member working on each project knew exactly where they were at. They weren't just swimming out there from beginning to end. They knew what stages they had to go through.
Right, so they could pick up that schedule and actually point to a specific point on that schedule and know that that's right where they are in, their, in the
exactly.
process.
And if I came to review the project, then I would say, okay, where are we on this schedule? And they could point out to where they are on the schedule, and they were either on time or they were behind time. And if they were behind time, I says, is it your fault or is it our fault or is it someone else's fault? And if it's someone else, or if there's unavoidable, then we'd rewrite the new schedule right then and there. Just change the dates or however we did it. And that made a huge difference. Those are what I called the client fulfillment systems. Michael Gerber talks about the seven centers of attention in a business. Well, we in architecture plus business talk about six. We have six centers of attention. They are leadership, financial, management, marketing, business development, and client fulfillment. So the key, as Michael says, and as I say, is when you're starting in a small business and you're trying to retool or reconvert your business, is to tackle the whole business at once. It's just completely overwhelming.
Right.
If you break it down into these six centers of attention, which are, you can then tackle them one by one. You work basically what I call old co and new co. New co being a systematized business, but you work at one system at a time. Learn it, put it into practice in your office, and then move on to the next system, and so on and so forth. And I would say, to do this successfully from beginning to end in an architect's firm, if you're really sort of focused, anywhere between 3 and 5 years to make the complete transformation.
Yeah, that was something that I was going to ask you, because you know, I work with a lot of architects, and I think the biggest problem that we have, and when they start thinking about how am I going to do all this, is that I have so much to do. I have so much work to do. I don't know how I could possibly build these systems and have my business run any differently than it is now. And so what you're saying is to break it down, chunk it down into different pieces, and have these six centers of attention: leadership, finance, management, marketing, business development, and client fulfillment, and start with leadership. Create those systems that you need in that center of attention, one by one. So you don't even hit those all at all at the same time. You do each system within the leadership center of attention first, and then do one at a time. And once you're finished with that, then move on to the next one.
The other thing in making the conversion that I noted, and how I did it in my own company when I was working in the mastery program with the E-Myth, is the discipline of you have to. I gave up 20% of my time, which sounds huge, but that's what you have to do. 20% of your time you have to devote to working on your business, learning business, and writing systems. So 20% of your time. This is what I did. Now, I did 2 half days a week. that I was focused on working on the business, as Michael Gerber says. Once I got in the habit of it, I managed to sort of get all the other work done that I had to do anyway. It's just a discipline and a priority setting and all that sort of thing. And without that, though, without setting those priorities and trying to just sort of squeeze it in here and there, I say it would be very difficult, if not impossible, to sort of make this transition.
Right. It needs to become a priority, and it needs to be an item on your calendar every week.
Exactly.
And so you need to, if it is 20% of your time or 2 half days, that time on your schedule needs to be blocked out and reserved for that business development, that work, that systems development that you're going to do. And it becomes a meeting. Just like if you had a client meeting, you would never miss a client meeting. You cannot miss this time as well, where you focus on learning what you need to learn. So maybe you're reading, maybe you're looking at websites, maybe you're on programs online, and then you're applying those, what you've learned in those books and those online programs at that time. And you do it every week consistently, and you have these small victories, which will end up leading to a very major reward at the end and your business running smoothly. And the more time you spend building these systems, the easier everything gets. So the more you dedicate and the more you invest, which is how you have to look at it, it's a mindset, you're investing in your business. The more you invest in your business, the more return you'll get on the other end. Earlier this week, I announced the launch of the Get Focused course. It's a 16-session video course where I share everything I know about productivity and living a successful, stress-free life as a small firm architect. It's not easy to live the life of a small firm architect. We are constantly bombarded by things to do, and rarely are they the things we want to do. We're pulled in every direction as we try to balance our work and our life. Every day feels like one big, long, never-ending to-do list. We struggle just to find the time to fit in the things that matter most. Throughout the past 2 decades, I have learned so much about personal productivity. Experimenting with time management tactics has sort of become a passion of mine. I've read all the books and I've applied all the systems. And what I've determined over the years is that one system alone does not solve all the problems. None of the productivity gurus have all the answers. As a small firm architect, the founder of Entree Architect, a husband and a dad, I've discovered that a successful, stress-free life is the result of getting things done and focusing on the things that matter most to me. An integrated life is my goal, where the time with my firm and the time with my family merge to become one well-functioning, happy life. And as our Entree Architect community grows at the blog, our social media grows, and our Entree Architect Academy grows, I've learned that we're all struggling to stay focused and live a successful, stress-free life. The mission of Entree Architect here is to inspire success for small firm architects. And the first step towards success is to learn how to get things done. And that is why I created the Get Focused course. I will help you get things done. In 16 video sessions, I share everything I've learned. From creating a morning ritual, to knowing how to set up your Mondays so you have a successful work week, the best way to process and manage your to-do list, learning which tasks that should not be on your to-do list and starting to delegate them to others, how to conquer procrastination once and for all, what to do when your email inbox is exploding and stealing your day away. I even share my personal productivity tools and all my favorite books about time management and getting things done. And these are just a few of the topics I've included. And there's just so much more I want to share. If you're interested in learning more, I invite you to visit the Get Focused course at getfocusedcourse.com. Check it out, getfocusedcourse.com.
What I did often was either I locked my office door, or I went off-site. I went either to the library, or there was a university right next door to where my office was. I went to their library and worked in there so I wouldn't get any distractions from the office. You have to really sort of set down some solid ground rules for yourself.
Yeah, that's a good idea to remove yourself from the environment of your typical daily work and put yourself maybe in a different place, so it really becomes part of the habit of building these systems where at that moment you get up and you go to that meeting, which is the meeting with yourself.
Precisely.
You go to this other place and you sit down and you get to work. You shut off your phone so it doesn't ring. Mm-hmm. And you turn off your email and you turn off all the notifications on your phone so you don't get any social media, you know, ding-a-lings happening while you're working. And you get to work and you focus for the amount of time that you've dedicated to doing this. And you make progress little by little.
So then once you have kind of the systems written the way you want to, when you, the way you think they would work in your office, and to learn writing systems is a bit of an art form in itself that you have to learn, or a skill that you have to learn. Then you have to introduce these systems into the culture of your office. And I have found, especially in an office that's running, that there's some people will buy into the systems and some people absolutely will not.
Yeah.
There's a mindset among architects and technicians that some people just believe once you systematize something, you take the creativity out of it.
Yeah.
And in fact, I had to part company with some of the people in my office so I could, in fact, develop this culture of systems in an office and systems usage in an office. And writing the systems is a difficult task, but bringing them into the office culture and making them work is a tough task. But once it's done, it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah. Would you recommend that once you sort of create the outline and the structure and the framework of the system, to bring it into your office and not sort of dictate it to the studio, but to basically say, here's what I'm thinking, you know, let's figure out as a group, how do we make this better and how do we implement this in order to get buy-in from your employees to make them sort of part of the team? Or should it be the other way around where we're developing these systems and we're saying, okay, this is how we're going to do it from now on?
No, absolutely. When you introduce the systems, there's a process. There's a process to writing systems. And one of the systems is getting the idea of what systems you need and what drives identifying systems, then basically outlining the systems, then writing the systems yourself. But call them draft systems. Then you lay the draft system onto the users. And then the users ask the users for input. And how do they think that this could be improved? And what words or what tweaks could be made to make this more usable? And that at that point, and then you rewrite it to use this. And sometimes they make useful suggestions, and sometimes you just make some changes just to sort of be inclusive of your team. And then the team tries it, and then something works and something doesn't, and then you might have to rewrite it again. And then eventually it becomes culture. And once it's culture, it's a beautiful thing. Now, when you have the systems running in the office, they from time to time have to be evaluated to make sure that they're working. And I would say a minimum of sort of once a year, and some systems more often. And the other thing that we found in the process of employing systems is you can evaluate the system's user as well. And that basically is a very important tool to see how your employees, in fact, are doing. Where previous to systems, pretty much you evaluated your employees. Well, we had some systems or some ideas how we evaluated our employees. But once we had the systems running, we evaluated the users. And then that basically evaluated our employees on a year-by-year basis. We had a binder. Or a binder, a folder where we had all the systems, users, evaluations, and they formed basically the basis of the annual employee evaluation.
So it gave you a framework to not only judge their performance, but how they're working with the system.
Exactly, exactly. And how they're what kind of employee they are from 1 year to the next, because as you know, architects are busy, and sometimes they don't pay enough attention to this, and so at the end of the year they don't have any material to make this evaluation. So the evaluation is done on an intuitive basis, which isn't always the best way to evaluate people.
Right. Right. And so you said to review the systems at least once per year. So that again is something that we need to schedule and say, okay, on this date or this week, we're going to, you know, stop what we're doing and reevaluate the systems that we're working on. My Entrepreneur Architect Academy, which is a private online group with about 40 or 50 small firm architects as members, and we get together every week and talk about business, and then we also have private coaching, and some of the members in that group are actually are scheduling several days to a week in their schedule to do an offsite, just like the big corporations do. But they're sole proprietors, and so they actually leave their office, they go away, and sort of like a vacation, but it's focused on business, and they evaluate their business, and they work on their business plan, and they build their systems, and they do the things they need, and then they come back to their studio and re-implement. You can do the same thing when you have employees. You can as the owner can take that offsite, do what you need to do, and maybe if you have partners, you do that with partners. And then come back to the studio and dedicate specific time to bring the employees on board with the evaluation and get their take as well on what's working and what's not working at least once a year. And then make those adjustments as you need on a yearly basis. But the important thing is that it becomes part of your routine, part of your schedule.
The key to what you're saying here and I've discovered is that, and it goes back to what Michael Gerber says, you set aside architecture for a minute. You don't talk about design. You don't talk about, you know, solving the problems of your clients and all that sort of stuff. You focus on your own company and you deal with those problems. You know, many architects that I know, many of my colleagues that I know, they don't even know how to talk about running their own businesses. They whenever you raise the subject, they get all nervous and uptight, right? Because they don't have that vocabulary. And what's interesting about meeting you online and other people that are doing what we are doing is that we acknowledge that's a issue. We're doing something about it, and I think that's the key. Now, as you sort of work your way through this, you do some things that work and you do some things that don't work, and that's part of the process. That's in developing this business culture of architecture.
Yeah, and I see the passion you have for it, and I have that same passion. And I believe that, you know, you said before that there are so many architects that hear the word systems and their hackles come up, and they
exactly.
You know, they get upset that, you know, you're going to take away their freedom to create. And my argument to that is that when you spend the time to build those systems and to create a better business, then you have more time to do the things you love, because everything else becomes automated. Everything else becomes systematized. People are doing what they're supposed to be doing. People know what they're supposed to be doing and they're doing it. The stress level comes down. The culture in the studio is better. They're happier. They're doing the things they love to do, because the things that they don't know how to do that stress them out, that they have to rethink every time they do it because it's not a system, that takes time and that takes energy and takes away the creativity of architecture. And so when those things are in place and you invest the time to build those systems, then you have much more time and much more freedom to create the amazing architecture that you dreamed that you want to create.
The one example that I like best is, and I did a survey on this, is that just simple thing like the a simple database where you have all the phone numbers and all the contact information on people that you're doing business with, clients, you know, contractors, consultants, etc. And, you know, I did a survey of 25 architects, and you know that only probably three of them had a proper database. The other 20 odd had no database at all. And you know how much time that, so I did a little crazy little calculation that it was between, there's about 10 days wasted in an office per year searching for phone numbers and contact information and being clumsy about that whole communications thing.
Right. And that's such a simple system to do, because you have all the information. It's just
exactly.
A matter of putting it in the right place. So maybe that's a great, an action plan for our listeners. Maybe in order for us to sort of get a little taste of what Norbert and I are talking about here, and then maybe you can feel a little bit of the excitement that we do when we're talking about this, maybe dedicate yourself to schedule it on your calendar, put it in there, and just don't commit to the entire thing. Don't commit to rebuilding your whole business and putting all these systems in. Just mm-hmm. commit to putting together your database of contacts and your employee database, or not your employee data, your client database. So you know when those clients came in, how often that you, did you talk to them before they became clients? All the steps that it takes that we all go through every time we have a client, put together a spreadsheet that talks about all those touch points. And maybe you don't even fill it in with all your past clients, just build the database. And then once it's built, then start plugging it in. When you get the next inquiry for the new project, you fill it in there. You can do it on Google Docs, and you can create a form in Google Docs. This is something Enoch Sears has recently shared with me. You create it on Enoch Sears from businessofarchitecture.com. You create a form in Google Docs. That form automatically goes to a database. So every time you get a call, you pull up that form, you fill in the form, and that form automatically fills in the database. And then from that point forward, forever from that point forward, you have an ongoing database with every client that you've ever talked to, every prospect that you've ever talked mm-hmm. to, and their telephone number and their address and the type of work that they want to do. So if you don't get that job, you can go back to that database and you can say, okay, which ones did I talk to and which ones were hot leads but never followed through? And it'll be there. So dedicate yourself to just creating that form and that database. Don't do anything else. Just do that and see how that works for you. And then once you do that, I think Norbert would agree with me. And once you do that, you'll want to see what the next thing is. Once that's working, you're going to want to say, okay, well, that works. Look at what that's done for me. What's the next thing I should do? And then you'll do the next thing. And then you'll do that, and then you'll do the next thing. And eventually, it'll just become part of your routine. It'll become a habit, and you'll just be constantly, you know, 20% of your time will be dedicated to building your business, to be working on your business like Michael talks about. So I would love that. I think that's a great idea to just do that one thing, Norbert. Thanks for suggesting that.
Well, I think to look at it from the outside, reconverting your business from the outside, it looks overwhelming. But once you do one or two things that start to work, then you become encouraged and you see what other things you could do, and you start doing them sort of one at a time. And I remember how it transformed me. At first, it was uphill all the way, and then once these systems started to in fact work, I got so very excited that I'm going to do this to my whole company, and it made a huge difference. And the most important thing that I felt a confidence that I never felt before in the 25 years that I was in business before that. I felt a confidence that I was doing business properly that I never felt before. I was always kind of unsure of myself. And I know my clients and other people that did business with me sensed this uncertainty that I had in me about not knowing really what I was doing as far as business is concerned.
Yeah, and that becomes a constant source of stress. Mm. That becomes this thing that's in the back of your head that's always sort of, you know, poking you. Mm-hmm. That it doesn't go away until you fix it, until you start solving these problems, until you start learning what you need to learn and building these small little systems. I agree with you. And when you start doing that, you know, your life starts to change. And by starting small and by creating a discipline, will lead to a habit. By putting it on your calendar and hitting it every Tuesday at 10 o'clock, you're going to do this from 10 to 12, mm-hmm. 2 hours a week, say. And that'll become a routine. And as it becomes a routine, it'll become a habit. And when you miss it, you'll miss it. You'll mm-hmm. want to do it. And mm-hmm. so you want to make it a habit. And then once it's a habit, it becomes fun because then you want to get in there. Okay, what am I going to do this week to make the business better? And you just do one little system at a time, and those systems add up to become, you know, your systems Bible, like Norbert said.
Well, you said about it being fun. Well, until I started learning business. It always intimidated me, and I was always fearful of it, and I hated it, to tell you the truth. But then once I started doing it, I got very excited about learning business. It's just every architect loves to learn. And so even if it's business that you're learning, it's a sort of a natural learning thing if you got the right teacher.
Yeah, I agree. As soon as I started learning about business and looking at it like a game, it really did. It became fun. And the better you get at it, the more fun it gets. Just like when you're playing in a sport, you play baseball. The first time you play baseball, it's hard. You know, if you remember, go back and think about that first time trying to hit that baseball. But once you get good at it, it becomes a really fun thing.
So now, with my people that I mentor, actually the most successful students that I have are two electrical engineers. And they are so excited about, I've been with them for 2 years. Now they've hired me as an advisor to their company on an ongoing basis, as long as I want to be there to advise them on their systems and just to be an advisor who understands business as they understand business. And every time I show up, they're very excited and their business has grown by leaps and bounds. They just can't believe how successful they could become. And when I started with them 3 years ago, they were, you know, just at sort of the, one of the beautiful things about them is though, they never learned business the bad way. I started off with them when they started their business. So they don't even know how business, the bad ad hoc business practices that most small businesses have. They started off the right way right from the beginning, and that's the ideal way. And I go back to talking about anybody that's wants to start an architect's office should in fact start in a systems manner,
exactly,
and in a proper business way, and then they never have to go through this transition, because this transition I would say would be harder than learning a business the wrong way, or old co, as I call it, and then having to make that transformation. It's tough than making this transition in the middle of the stream, as the saying goes.
Yeah, so we're talking to you out there, you architecture students and young architects. Make sure that you you focus on the business. I say profit, then art. That's a good way to remember it. Profit, then art. The art will come once you start building a business that's profitable. Norbert, do you have room for more mentees? Are you mentoring? Is your schedule open for more?
Okay, well, basically, okay. So I do private mentoring in Edmonton where I live, but architecture plus business we're online mentoring. We have a program that's not unlike the eMyth. It's called Architecture and Business, and if you go to our website, which is architectureplusbusiness.com. You can find out about our program. And we have business coaches who I've personally instructed on how to mentor online, a.k.a. eMyth Mastery. And they reside in California, but it doesn't matter where they are. They can take you through the whole program. We have 21 online lessons that you can take over 1 or 2 years, depending on the speed you want to operate at. And so, yeah, we're open. We're set up to be able to handle about 40 students once we get up and running. Great. We just went online on the 1st of May.
Oh, so it's relatively new. I didn't realize that. That's great. So it's Architecture Plus Business. So that's all spelled out, Architecture Plus, PLUS, business.com.
Yes. Correct.
And you can find out more information there. You're also on Twitter as Arch Plus Bis, B-I-S. So it's A-R-C-H-P-L-U-S-B-I-S.
Correct.
So you're Architecture Plus Bis on Twitter. So you can connect with Norbert there. Is there any email that you'd prefer the people connect with you, or should they just go to the site and
No, it's Norbert@ Architecture Plus Biz, or you can also do Joe@ Architecture Plus Biz. No, architectureplusbusiness.com.
Right, architectureplusbusiness.com. Okay, great. So Norbert, thank you very much. First of all, I want to thank you for your dedication to the profession and your inspiration, because not only are you teaching architects how to run successful businesses, you're an inspiration to the young architects who are coming in and seeing that there's a better way to do it. And you're an inspiration for the older generation who find themselves in this position after decades of struggling. You've done that. You've gone decades of struggling, and you've discovered the right way to do it. And you took the action and you rebuilt your business and built it to the point where you could then sell it to your employees and then go off and do a second career in this architecture business, online business and mentoring. So I want to just acknowledge you for that and thank you for that.
Well, thank you for the opportunity of allowing me to speak with you. And it's an inspiration for me to talk to someone like you who's also doing the similar sort of thing and trying to develop this business in our profession.
Thank you. I think you and I, and there's a handful of others out there, we're going to change the world, because we're going to change the profession. And this profession is the one that builds this world. So, I think that you and I are on a mission to change the world here.
Good. Thank you. That's how I feel.
Yeah. So thank you very much, Norbert, for your time today and for sharing your knowledge on the Entrepreneur Architect Podcast.
Please send me your contact information and I'll send you my book.
I will absolutely do that. Absolutely do that. Thanks for being here today, Norbert.
The pleasure was mine completely. Thank you. It's nice to talk to you.
You're welcome. If you like this episode, please go to iTunes and leave me a review, because this is how you may help me spread the word about Entre Architect and our mission to become an influential force in this profession of architecture. Just go to entrearchitect.com/iTunes. It's easy to remember. entrearchitect.com/iTunes, and leave me a review. And that is a wrap for today's show. Show notes and a direct link to this episode will be found at entrearchitect.com/episode80. Finally reached 80, closing in on 100 here. But before we go, quote of the week. I thought it would be appropriate to quote Mr. Gerber, Michael E. Gerber, the author of The E-Myth Revisited. "The difference between great people and everyone else is that great people create their lives actively, while everyone else is created by their lives, passively waiting to see where their life takes them next. The difference between the two is living fully and just existing." My name is Mark R. LePage, and I thank you very much for being here. I'm an entrepreneur architect, and I'll see you next week.
From historic homes to modern architecture, brick is one of the most popular building materials around the world.
How to allow the house to bridge the gap between the history of the site, the approachability of this kind of architecture in this kind of neighborhood, and the sort of nostalgia of materiality for the client's past, right? And brick really started to provide an answer for that.
Hi, I'm Doug Pat, and this is Design Vault. There aren't many materials that easily blend with any style and context, but brick does just that. I've seen some extraordinary work with brick, so when Glengarry approached me about hosting this podcast, I couldn't say no.
Typically, Tudor-style houses from outside are just stunningly gorgeous piece of structure, and when you go in, it's just sad.
Yeah.
Dark. And that is not going to happen with my approach to design.
I speak with industry leaders and share inspiring stories behind their work and ingenious design.
You'll see brick that's fashioned into basket weave patterns, sawtooth patterns, what's known in England as diapering.
doesn't sound like you knew them per se, right? They found you through relationships that you had with other.
Well, wait, Doug, there's more.
Okay. We'll go behind the scenes to understand process and even the inspiration that sparked the design.
You know, I think we were inspired by all the factory buildings in Dumbo. I mean, that is the kind of period of significance, that early American factory building.
Design Vault by Glenn Gehry. Visit glengehry.com/design-vault or search for Design Vault wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe now to stretch your imagination.
Attention architects and creative minds, get ready to supercharge your brand with Build Your Brand, the podcast that's unlocking the secrets of branding success for creatives. Hey there, it's Mark Arlepage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my friend, architect marketing expert, Jeff Eccles at Build Your Brand podcast, where he explores the captivating stories of the world's top brands and transforms their lessons into powerful moves for small firm architects and creatives like you. In season one, Jeff shares the thrilling tale of Southwest Airlines, where he dissects their journey to the summit and distills it into strategies tailor-made for you.
It's important to keep in mind that companies like Southwest compete in the real world, just like you, and face real-world challenges, just like you. You might be surprised at how similar those challenges are to the struggles that you grapple with on a day-to-day basis.
Don't miss out on your blueprint for success. Subscribe, tune in, and let's build your brand together.
You may have noticed that the very best brands in the world are also known for having somewhat unique corporate cultures. That's often the glue that holds everything together when they encounter those rough spots.
We don't do it because it inconveniences the passengers to whom we are primarily dedicated, the short-haul frequent flyer.
Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Build Your Brand today. Remember, no matter the size, the journey's the same. Your brand's journey to the top starts here.